I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast. So, do you have any brothers and sisters?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Do you?
Uh-huh.
Well, you said that in such a weird way. Do you have a weird relationship with them?
I have technically four brothers and four sisters because, I have I'm a child of divorce, so.
Oh, okay, so you have step brothers and sisters?
Yep. I have, my mom and dad had three. I'm the youngest of those three. It's a brother, William, sister, Sarah, and then myself. And then, they were divorced when I was four.
Oh.
My dad remarried someone who had two kids, a boy and a girl. They had two more kids, a boy and a girl. So I've got a stepbrother, a stepsister, a half-brother, and a half-sister through them. And then my mom remarried someone who also had two kids. So that's the other stepbrother and other stepsister, but they didn't have any other kids together.
Wow.
So it's...
It is a lot of children.
Yeah, yeah.
To navigate.
And from, like, about the age of eight, all of the... Well, not all of those people were in my life. I guess my youngest half-brother was born when I was 10. So, I've always had...
Wow, tons of brothers and sisters.
Four sisters, yeah. But
wow.
I guess I'm still the closest to my brother and sister that are, like, of the same mom and dad.
Right.
And then, like, I still have, like... I don't have a bad relationship with any sibling, but there are definitely some that, like, you know, I only see, like, at a wedding or some sort of family event.
Sure.
A funeral, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, funerals are the adult family reunions. That's what you do.
Yeah.
That's how you see your family.
Yep. And then you're like, oh man, I'm like really emotional right now, and I'm seeing you for the first time in 3 years, and I'm realizing I should see you more. Like, also, like, why, like, we're siblings. Like, sure, maybe we're step-siblings, but, like, we're still, yeah, like, I should make a better effort, but, I don't know, life is, I don't know, you get caught up in your routines and stuff, and...
Yeah, plus, I don't know, it must be interesting to come from such a, like, big crowd of a family. Like, do you, like, super value your alone time and your, like, privacy now as an adult?
I guess so. In that headspace for quite a while now where I'm like, I feel very alone and I appreciate my alone time, I suppose, but I am also aware that being the youngest of, like, my immediate siblings, I grew up in a house that was, like, that people were around all the time, you know? So I'm used to that, and that's where I find comfort. So I've been, like, doing this, like, I don't know, solo journey that I'm gonna continue on to, like, literally be alone in the sense of being the only, like, family member, in California. But... I appreciate my alone time, but I also really enjoy, being around family. Like, my brother's my roommate right now, so.
Oh.
Yeah, so. And in a way, I wonder if that is, like, some sort of, like, safety net for myself. Like, where I'm like, well, this is where I'm comfortable, you know? It's like, I like knowing that, like, if something happens, I can, you know, call my brother, or my mom only lives so many hours away.
Sure.
So if she had to, she could, you know, get in.
So you're not from Austin?
I'm from South Texas.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So 5 hours south of here. I guess I'm looking at a map of Texas right now. That very, very bottom tip is where I'm from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Grew up very close to South Padre Island, so that was a decent place to go to as a child.
So you had, like, a Jimmy Buffett childhood?
I guess so. There was a lot of alcohol.
Did you work at a tiki bar or on the beach or anything?
I worked at a Chili's, but I did when I was 17, and now I never. By the time I went to college, I went to school in Kentucky, so once I started like working, like was more in Austin, really. So like most of my like adult jobs have been here. So no tiki bars or anything. But
you know, I figured South Padre, big party town. Maybe that was your childhood. You were like, you know.
Right, right. Going down to, I mean, my
or,
one
you know,
of my
your
stepbrothers,
parents or the people who sell the floats. Who knows what life is?
My stepdad was a charter fisherman for a good period of time. So like on the weekends he would get paid to take people fishing.
Nice.
Yeah. So
that's pretty
awesome. Yeah, yeah. For if you're into fishing.
Yeah. My husband's super into it, so the idea of that sounds wonderful for him.
I don't know why I'm not. And a part of me like feels bad that I'm not, because as a kid, it was, like, every weekend, you know, there's, like, and we're going fishing, we're getting up at 5 a.m., and we're going, and I'm, like, I just want to hang out, you know, and I think the most recent time that I went home, we did that again, we all went fishing, I went with my brother and his girlfriend, and then we went offshore fishing, and I didn't fish once, I was just there, and I guess, like, that was like rude on my behalf, or like somewhat
they didn't like
upsetting
that.
Yeah, because I was like, no, I enjoy this, like I like that we're out in the middle of the ocean right now.
Yeah.
And I like that I'm spending time with y'all. I just know that like I'm not gonna find much joy in letting this, you know, bait sink down to the bottom where yes, I'm gonna reel up some red snapper and we're gonna eat it later. And because of that, I'm not into seafood at all. And I don't know if it was because it was like every week at my house there was fish. I'm like, I don't like this.
Interesting.
Maybe it was my rebellion.
Yeah, it's like a little rebellion, but like, you know, not a crazy horrible one, but like just I don't like this one thing.
Yeah.
I feel like that about politics. My mom was very political growing up, and she was always going to rallies and at places, you know, putting papers in, you know, putting letters and doing a letter writing campaign or holding picket signs. And she would take us with her. And so we just went, I've held so many picket signs as a child. Like, they used to dress me up in the, you know, she worked for unions and they'd put slogans on my shirts and my hats. And, you know, that's where I started performing, was, like,
in picket
lines and, like, hanging around a bunch of adults, you know.
Were you passionate about it then, or did you know then that you were like, this is not me, I'm, like, literally just a prop?
I don't know. I mean, I don't recall having
too many deep
emotions at the time of, like, I hate this or I like this. I mean, also, like, childhood reactions are, you know, sort of like, I'm sure I didn't want to do whatever, but I was a kid, so I didn't want to do whatever my parents told me to. But I don't know. We went to a lot of things. I liked meeting all the people. It was always like a different event place, or they had like a little place where she and her friends would get together, and you know, there's always room for me to run around and play by myself while they made their picket signs or. You know, got the papers together to put in the envelopes. And I used to, they'd make me put the letters in the envelopes, so I was like, oh, man, really? That's why I'm very apolitical now. I just don't do it at all, because it's like,
I don't,
you know.
I don't have the energy. My sister is the executive director of the Republican Party of Arkansas.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, like, politics is also, like, kind of in my family, too.
Yeah.
But I'm just, like, on the other side of that.
So your family is partially in Kentucky?
No, no one in my family's in Kentucky. I just got scholarship to go to school in Kentucky.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe your sister is doing politics in Arkansas?
Little Rock, yeah.
Oh, okay. And
but
so I thought maybe there were.
My mom was born in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and that's where my grandparents just my grandmother now lives. And my sister went to school in Arkansas because both of my grandparents were alum of Arkansas Tech, and my grandpa took her, you know, on a tour her senior year because she didn't know where she was going to go. And, yeah, so then she fell into that that side of our family's life, and
that's kind of where she's been. She's just hanging out with that crowd.
Yeah, yeah, so it's, like, it's awesome, like, how, I don't know, like, successful she's been, and, like, just always been, like, a go-getter, like, got her bachelor's in, like, 3.5 years, went straight into her master's, finished it, and then, you know, now has, like, pretty high up there job for her age, and
working her way up in the political system of Arkansas. That's pretty great.
Yeah, I don't know what her end goal is, but
I'm sure wherever it'll take her.
Right.
There's a lot of options.
Right. I'm just not. It's funny because my grandfather was a county judge, and I gave the eulogy at his funeral, and so many people were in attendance, but so many of those people came up to me and were like, I bet you're going to have a career in politics too, aren't you? You're just going to be a part. And I was like, Lord, no, that's the last thing, like, that I would get into. I'd be a bad politician. Not like a scheming, like, bad politician. Just, like, I would just be bad at it.
Yeah, you'd be bad because you didn't want to scheme.
Right, exactly. I'd be like, no, this is terrible. What? So, you know,
yeah.
Politics is not in my planned future.
Well, I'm sure that you'll have to be political in a certain extent when you're if you're gonna do acting in Los Angeles. Did you go to Kentucky? So before we get to Los Angeles, before I talk to you about that, I want to know: did you go to Kentucky for theater school? Like, did you get a drama degree or just do theater there? Or
so as a middle schooler and high schooler, I did competitive speech and debate.
Oh.
And so basically every single weekend we would, you know, travel across mostly the state of Texas and do, like, humorous interpretation, dramatic interpretation, duet acting, which is, like, basically you take scripts, like theater plays, condense them into 10-minute performances, and you wear a suit, and you perform in front of your other competitors and a judge who ranks you, you know, first through sixth. And then the state of Texas is pretty competitive in, speech and debate, and so as a junior, I was a national finalist, and then and got sixth in, like, duo interpretation, which is, like, I guess it was a pretty big deal, for, like, being from, like, a small town school. And then in my senior year, and I went to a national competition in Los Angeles, and that's actually the only time that I've been out there. So I haven't been in 8 years, but it was, like, the national individual events tournament of champions or something of the sort. And I got second in, at that national tournament in dramatic interpretation. And one of the judges was, the director of forensics at Western Kentucky University.
Mm.
And, was like, I saw you, at nationals last year and at Harvard, which is, like, another big national tournament. And I, like, would like to offer you a full ride to, like, compete on our collegiate team.
Great.
And at the time, of course, I didn't want to. Like, L.A. had always been the goal. Like,
sure.
Go to L.A. and become an actor. And that's, like, you know, all I want. And now, you know, 8 years down the road, I'm thankful that I took the college route.
Yeah.
And, but at the time, I was not. And I actually ended up dropping out after 2 years because I still was, like, unhappy. And actually, my grandfather passed away at the spring semester of my sophomore year, went to the funeral in Fort Smith, and my brother had just graduated from A&M, was moving to Austin, and I was like, I'm going to move with you. So I moved here for a year when I was 20, and then realized Probably. That was stupid. Like, I gave up a pretty good deal, you know, getting school paid for. So I just called the director of forensics and asked, like, what can I do to come back? And I, like, got, like, a partial amount of my scholarship back and went back to Kentucky for that junior and senior year. And then when I was down there, once again, was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I ended up back in Austin again, did a screenwriting apprenticeship at Austin Film Festival, and slowly finished school because they let me walk while still needing to finish three classes. So I finished two that summer and then took 2 years to finish my math class and just finished last December. So
you're taking it like ACC or something?
Yeah, and then just transferred it to Western.
Good old ACC, man. Transfers everywhere.
Yeah.
I have friends that from all over that did that where it was like they got to the end and were like, fuck it, and had 3 or 4 credits left, and then when they got older were like, I should probably get this degree.
Yep.
When in reality, like, I'm glad that you did. It's good that you did because you, like, completed this project. But it's like, in realistically, like, it doesn't actually matter.
No, it doesn't. And that's
which
the
is
thing,
hard,
too.
But it matters
but
to
I,
you
I
in
did
a completing
it.
A task situation.
That's yes.
important to a person's, like, sense of, you would always feel like something that you had never...
Yeah, especially like, one class.
Yeah.
Like, why did I not do that? But then now that it's done, I'm also, it's like the torn between, I never wanted this. My parents and my grandparents wanted this for me. So it's like, okay, sure, I'm pleasing them, and that's fine. And I'm thankful that I have an education, but
there's... It puts you in a better position in the world as far as, like, getting jobs. I mean, now there's so many more people that have degrees than didn't before, so it doesn't help as much. But I don't know. I mean, I've met a lot of people in my life, and, like, the time that... I actually truly believe that unless you know what you want to do in
right.
a way that is, like, you can become an apprentice to do whatever. Like, if you can go become... If you want to be a woodworker and you can just go work with a guy immediately, like, go do that. But, like, school, college is so... For me, it was, like, practice adulthood.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was like,
see if
you're
you can
safe,
be alone for a little bit.
There's enough people around. You're not going to get in too much trouble.
Yeah, you're still, like... held to a certain level of responsibility, like you gotta show up to class, you gotta, you know, do
your people are gonna worry about you,
right,
you know,
right.
There's a counselor of some kind that you need to check in with, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's like in adult, regular adult life after that, it's like, no, it's not like that, no one gives a shit, no one's checking on you, it can go well or it could not go well, but there's no one, there's no safety net, and I mean that in the, like, sometimes in the best way, because it's like, fine, please leave me alone, but sometimes it, you know, it can be hard if you didn't have the training of college to, you know, screw up a little bit in a safe environment.
I definitely screwed up a lot. So,
I mean, I remember I learned so much about. I remember there was a couple of people who, like, I went. So I'm from Boston, and I went to college in Texas. And so when I came down here, it was like crazy world for me. It was like such a culture change.
Yeah.
And the one thing that was really funny, that was a law that was only for my freshman year and then they changed the law, was that the open container law, you were allowed to just have open containers the year that I was a freshman in college.
Oh, wow.
No one cared if it was outside at all. And it was the year after that that they changed the law that then you couldn't have it. But, like, I remember showing up as a freshman and people just walking outside. And I'm maybe being like, what are you doing?
You can't do that, man.
Like,
you're
like,
nah, it's
Texas. Or, like, driving down the road in a pickup truck. Everyone's just holding a beer. And I'm all like, I feel like this is not right. You know. But then the next year when the law changed, you know, you don't always get memos about law changes. Like, they don't.
Totally fair, yeah.
You know. I'm sure these days there's an app for that, but, like, back then there wasn't. There was no phone like that where you could get information.
Yeah.
And,
like,
yeah, people aren't going, like, just so everyone knows.
They put in flyers in everyone's mailbox.
Yeah.
Law's changing. No more alcohol outside.
Yeah, they don't go to colleges and say, by the way, don't stand outside with your beers. Yeah. So a number of my friends stood outside with their beers and got arrested.
What?
So I learned the ins and outs of getting people out of jail.
Yeah.
And also raising money from groups, because one
for
guy
bail.
Went to jail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Went to jail, and then we went room to room in the dorm that he lived in, getting money to get him out of jail. It was
That's
wonderful.
Great.
It was
That's
one of the
great.
Funniest, one of the funniest memories. Because at the time, I remember being, like, scandalized.
Yeah.
I'd never, nothing like this had ever happened.
Okay.
You know, in high school, we were trying to get in trouble, and people wouldn't,
yeah,
you know,
they're like, stop, just go back.
Yeah, they're
to
like,
life.
Just get out of here.
Yeah.
You know, my friends and I would drive around. We weren't really drinkers,
uh-huh.
But we didn't want to be at our house. So one of our friends had a big van, and we just cruised around. And they'd pull us over all the time, because it's like 10 people in a van. It was a big passenger van filled with teenagers. We looked like we were doing something wrong.
Uh-huh.
But then they'd pull us over and nothing. Like, we were the
They couldn't find
dumbest.
Anything. Yeah.
We were just hanging out, messing with each other, talking.
Yeah.
And we'd go out for coffee. And we're like, what are you guys? Oh, what did I get? Seven teenagers with coffee breath? Keep going. You know, we were always like, are you going to pull us up? Are you going to give us a ticket? Like, for what?
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, it's important, I think, to go to college and have that experience.
Yeah, I got arrested sophomore year.
In college?
Uh-huh, yeah. It was a DUI, but...
Sure.
Yeah, not the best experience, but an experience nonetheless, you know? Spent a night in jail, got a mugshot floating on the internet somewhere,
mm-hmm.
but it's hidden quite a bit. But
sure.
I can find it if I need to. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
It's okay, what do you have to... I mean, it's not like... it. In the world that we live in, it's better not to hide it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's how I just feel about my entire existence. Like,
well, the weird thing about it is it's like, you know, the ebb and flow of what's been fine, like, it's fine,
it,
you know, changes. And with different people's reactions.
Absolutely.
So, you know, who knows how it is, but really, with all the... it's better to be honest about it than to be found out.
Right,
because
like, oh, you've been hiding
this.
People
get so crazed about that stuff these days. I'm like, I've done crazy stuff. Would you like me to list it? No?
Because we can go through it. Yeah, I mean,
there are laws that I have not obeyed. No one's called me on it, but I've definitely...
It's there. That is a weird thing that I go through where I'm like, where I feel like, oh, I'm hiding that. Because, like, I'm not telling every single person, but it's like, I don't need to be, like, hey,
only
I'm John.
Sex offenders have to tell you
everything
directly up front.
I drove drunk multiple times, but I was caught once, and, I actually got lucky another time recently here in Austin. I haven't drank in a little over 11 months, but, a little over a year ago, my car broke down at like 2:10 a.m. So I've literally just left a bar, and I've probably, you know, had quite a bit to drink. And my initial reaction is, get the fuck out of the car. Just get out, and like, we'll figure it out from there, but don't be in your car. And there's already a cop behind me, flashes his lights on. And I'm like, I'm going back to jail. All right, cool. This is it. This is when I stop drinking, because I'm going to jail again for drinking and driving. And I was just like, I don't know what's going on. It broke down. And he's like, well, do you have insurance? And I didn't. And I lied and said, yeah, but I don't have my insurance card on me at the moment. He's like, no, I was going to see if maybe your insurance could come and tow the car. I was like, oh, yeah. No, and I don't have AAA either, but I've got a friend that's coming to pick me up. Like, who did I call in that minute? And he was just like, so you have someone coming to pick you up? I was like, yeah, I do. And he's like, okay, well, this isn't a very safe area, so do you want me to help you kind of, like, push your car and, like, closer to the side of the road? And I was like, yeah, that would be great. And then for a second, I was like, wait, is he getting me back in my car? Is this, like, sketchy? And I was like, no, whatever, do it. Just, like, get in the car, and then I get in the car, I can't find the car keys, because, like, I was so nervous when my car broke down, because, like, I knew I shouldn't have been driving, that I, like, took the keys out and just, like, I guess threw them into the floorboard. So I get in the car, I was like, fuck, this is when he finds out, this is when he, like, knows that I'm drunk. And then I find them in the floorboard, get the car to turn on, put it in neutral, cop comes behind me, helps me push my car to the curb, and then I get out, and he's just like, all right, get home safe. And I just was so very thankful that happened to be what happened. Like, I had my wits about me enough to not appear as if I was drunk. Yeah. And I also had a very high tolerance at the time. So I was just like, I probably seemed like I was okay. I never got too close to, like, have, like, the smell of alcohol. But, I mean, it was, like, 2:10 on the east side off of 6th Street. Like, I'm clearly coming from drinking, but,
I mean, people live there, though, too. It's true. Not like it's just a party, like, restaurant area. It's, like, it's a residential area, too. Yeah, I mean, you could have been on shift. And Lord knows most people that work as, at bars and restaurants drink after their shift, so it's not
I used to be a bartender, so that's where it's
a rough crowd.
It's a great job if you love to drink.
Sure.
But other than that, like, it's, you're out till 3 or 4 in the morning all the time. You just have a reverse schedule, and it's
I had a similar situation to you when I first moved to town. I was here for maybe 6 months, and it was right around my birthday, which is July 5th, so it's right near a major holiday, and you know how cops are always looking around major holidays.
Right.
And, all the things. Though I don't know how many years ago this was, there might not have been the no refusal thing. But regardless, so when I first moved to town, I had had a weird, relationship. And, so everything on my car was illegal. Like, I didn't have insurance. I didn't have a registration. I didn't have a inspection sticker.
Yeah.
And I was probably late on my payments. Like, I was having a tough time when I first moved to town.
Yeah.
And I lived with, one of my girlfriends, and she helped me at first. But, you know, getting all that stuff, you have to get it in a certain order, and it costs money and all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a while, and I got lots and lots of tickets for it as I continued
during
the time while I was doing it. And every time I'd go, I'm working on it. You know, can you not give me a ticket? Because I'm halfway through this process, and I'm really trying, and, like, it's just very expensive, and I don't have money. And some of them would go, okay, you're not getting a ticket. And some of them would say, too bad you're getting a ticket.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had 6 or 7 tickets that I dealt with at that point. So it's July 4th. I'm out. I'm partying. I'm drinking. And at this point, I have moved out of my friend's place, and I'm living in an apartment. So I leave her house at the end of the party, and I'm heading home. And I'm in my car, and I'm most certainly drunk. And I am trying to get home. And I know, right now in my head, I can picture where I am, like, here in town. And so I get pulled over, and I go, oh, God, this is it. So you're going to get arrested, and it's a major holiday, so, you know, you're not getting out for a couple of days, and this is a problem, right? So it's a woman cop. She pulls me over. She comes over, and the first thing she says to me, so she walks up to the window, and I, despite my drunkenness, have quick thinking. And I go, I'm getting the car taken care of. I'm so sorry. And she's like, yeah, I noticed that your registration is out. And I was like, ma'am. And I tell her the whole story.
Yeah.
Just before she even says anything.
Like, have you been drinking?
Like,
can I see this?
Yeah, nothing. I immediately am like, listen, I had a hard time, and, like, we ran out of money, and, like, I lost all these things, and now I'm trying to get them back, and I'm, like, working so hard, and I'm so sorry. And she was like, it's okay, like, don't worry, I understand, like, you know, I can see that you got one of them a little bit ago, and so if you're working on the rest of them. And I literally had a binder.
Yes,
I had been pulled over so
yeah.
many times that, like, I had the receipts from the, like, I went to an auto body shop and they gave me a quote, mm-hmm. but I couldn't pay it, so I just kept the quote.
Yeah.
So I could be like, see, it's $1,500. I don't have $1,500.
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, okay, you know. And so she's like, I totally understand, but I still need to see your license and your, do you have, you know, your insurance card? And I was like, I don't have insurance, but I can give you all of the paperwork. So I give her all my paperwork.
Yeah.
She goes back to her car, and I'm all like, maybe I've convinced her. Maybe she won't give me a ticket, but I don't know. I mean, who knows what she's going to say to me
right.
when she comes back. Did I just breathe alcohol over her
uh-huh.
face the whole time I was
uh-huh.
talking? I don't know. So she comes back, and she goes, I noticed on your license that it's your birthday, so I'm going to go ahead and let you go. And I was like, oh, my God. Thank you so much. And
wow.
it was such a like,
wow.
oh my God, I can't believe
wow.
I got out of this. And at that point, I decided I was not going to drink anymore
uh-huh.
because I had gotten such a save.
Right.
That I was like, there is no way that you are ever getting out of it again after that. Previous to living here, I lived in New York. So when you live in New York, you don't drive.
Uh-huh.
So I would drink heavily.
Right, right.
And no one, it
just
wasn't a problem.
Get on the subway or take a taxi. Yeah.
Yeah, it was never a problem. So when I moved here and it was car, 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 that's when I kept getting, or when I was doing bad stuff. And it was
yeah.
this time when
yeah.
I got caught that I was like, okay, you live in a car town now. You're no longer allowed to do this. Like,
yeah.
if you'd like to drink, you're going to be at that place or you're going to get a ride home. Like, you're not doing it anymore. And I just stopped. Like, I really just don't drink at all anymore. And
yeah.
I'll have, like, a drink occasionally just to be festive.
Right.
But it's like maybe once every 6 months because
oh, wow.
that just rocked me so like
wow.
you're gonna like do
Let's...
you want to get how much trouble do you want to get in like
yeah, yeah.
and it was just like this is not worth it no
those are kind of moments where I mean my mother would phrase it as like someone's looking out for you or you know someone's looking down on you and I don't know if that's necessarily
sure.
you know the truth behind it but you're like yeah you're right that you cannot deny that maybe not a miracle, but there's some luck in that situation.
Oof.
And because that happened, it's like, I, you know, you put yourself in the situation of what if that didn't go down like that? Like, say you would have been in jail 3 days, or I would have, you know, if I would have gotten arrested again for a DUI, I would have been without a license for probably like a year or something. Had to do so much community service. You spend so much money getting arrested.
You do. It costs
yeah,
so much money.
It's expensive to get arrested.
Yeah, there's so much you have to do,
yeah.
and you keep having to pay fines. Yeah, I've had a lot of friends. I mean, because you know, I got so close myself and narrowly escaped it, I'm always helping people out with stuff. Like
yeah.
I'm always offering people rides when they don't have cars, and I don't ask them questions. Hey, whatever reason you don't have a car, you get in my car, I'll drive you home. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
sometimes it's like, well, I can't afford it. Great. I also one time couldn't afford it. Get in my car.
Yeah.
Like, what can I do to help you? Because I've been there. So
yeah.
I'm happy to drive you where you need to go. So, I mean, it's just little things like that where I feel like you have to go through these sort of the weirdest thing, the thing that, like, kills me the most is that, like, you have to go through these negative things
yeah.
to come out on the other side to, like, figure out what you really want to be.
That's, yeah.
Ugh. And it's such a wild thing. So to bring it back to Kentucky, so you're in Kentucky, you're not
mm-hmm.
like psyched to be there, but you power
no.
through
yeah.
and you finally at least finish it almost to the point where you leave Kentucky.
Right, where I at least walk.
At one point when you left, what was your like thing? What was your like, okay, now that I've done this thing that I didn't want to do, I'm going to do this for myself. What was the like,
well,
you know, move?
There was still that, like, that weight over my shoulders that I was lying to everyone. I didn't actually graduate, you know.
Oh, sure.
You know, people gave me money. My family came out. People posted pictures of me on social media, like, family members and whatnot. But I never uploaded them myself, or I never posted that status that's, like, loaded with, like, I am so, like, this is, I graduated, I can't believe it, here's my next move. Because, like, in my head, I'm like, I'm living a lie. I never actually graduated college.
Wow.
So I was like, I don't know what to do. So I felt like I had still kind of failed myself. But The goal was to, end goal, always be an actor. But I think I was like, you know what, maybe, like, I've been in love with, like, stand-up and just comedy since, like, a teenager, and I thought, maybe that's, like, my back door, you know? Like, I can do well in comedy and then get attention that way and then be like, but really, I'm this actor. So I thought maybe I'd move to Chicago, but that didn't end up panning out. I moved into my mom's house for about 8 months before I finally landed that awesome film festival thing here.
Was your brother already here?
He was, yeah. He's been here for about 6 years since we first had moved here together. That first time I dropped out.
Did he go to UT or did
he
just move here after college?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and then he moved here after college.
A&M. I feel like a lot of people from A&M move here. It's like a solid direct move.
Yeah, yeah.
The closest big city.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's like such a college town, you gotta get out of it.
It is, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
It's called College Station.
Right.
So,
they are not kidding around.
No, no.
Yeah, they just changed the name entirely. Like, we're not calling this Brian anymore. No.
This is college town.
Yeah, for real. But so he's here, so you have someone to come to. So when you decided to move out and then Chicago was a no-go, you were like, I'm going to go to Austin. I'll have my brother around at least.
Right, right, right. And
tell me about the screenwriting fellowship or apprenticeship. That sounds interesting.
It does, doesn't it?
Is that even a thing now?
It's a thing. It's a thing. It was one of those weird, like, life things where the day I was... Okay, so I was working at a sandwich shop, right? And I was just, like, a shift manager. And that morning or lunch, you know, I was offered the assistant manager position, which would have been, like, maybe, like, a salary of, like, $35,000, right? And then I'm like, oh, wow, I could make a decent amount of money right now, but I'm at a sandwich shop, right? And I go home, and I'm talking to my stepdad for, like, an hour, and he's like, yeah, you need to do this. This is obviously, you know, the right move. And then I go downstairs, I open my email, and I've got this awesome film festival screenwriting apprenticeship offer. And I'm like, oh my God, it's like, okay, follow like a step towards the dream or make money as a young person doing something you're not happy doing, but you're making money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I chose, obviously, to do the screenwriting apprenticeship. And I think every problem that came from that apprenticeship was really, well, I want to take blame for it. I don't think I was guided very well or, like, instructed on what to do. It was just kind of like I'm sitting on a couch, like, trying to set up maybe who could possibly do a panel or be a guest during the film festival, you know? But I didn't have much guidance, and I felt like everything I was doing was wrong, and this was probably my own... perception that I was, like, treated because I didn't go to, like, a well-respected film school that I was, like, condescended to, essentially.
Well, I think lots of people will condescend to you at all times. I don't mean you particularly.
Right.
I mean, there's a personality trait, especially in this business,
mm-hmm.
of people that express themselves in a way that is, like, I'm better than you and I want you to know it.
Yeah.
And they think that helps them. And sometimes,
right.
Most of the time, that is built out of fear.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
people with the most bravado are the most scared of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who don't have, like, the coolest, calmest people in the world, those are actually the gurus. Like, because they're like, why would I possibly tell you I know more than you? We've lived totally different lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so...
That sucks, though. I totally hear you on the, like, you didn't go to a, like, official school thing,
uh-huh.
though. I get that a lot, too.
Yeah.
And I'm older than you, and I've gotten it for a while.
Yeah.
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 No, it's hard, but fuck 'em.
Right. And that's how
and
I
at the
feel
end
now.
Of the day, the more you do it, the more work like, if you stay in the business consistently, there a lot of them are going to leave because it's hard. And they won't have the stamina.
Yeah.
Because it's not like the, you know, if there's that, so there are like a bunch of other people that you worked with. So like some people went to fancy schools and you didn't. And they were all like, you don't understand how to do this.
Yeah, kind of. But I'd say most everyone was a UT grad or current student.
UT still holds its, tells its grads they're pretty much the best in the world.
Right, right. And
yeah.
So
it's pretty solid.
Yeah, and it is a good school, and like, and not every, I'm not saying every person was this way that I worked with. There were great people there too, and some that I'm still friends with. But what was the question? I forgot.
Just about people and the relationships that you had with them, you know, while you were working there.
Yeah, I can't. I do wonder, like, if it was me, but, like, I clearly didn't feel that for nothing, you know?
Sure.
Like, to the point where I was like, I just don't really care, like, this didn't turn out to be what I wanted it to be. I think I saw it as, like, this, like, oh, yes, this is what a fantastic opportunity, like, I'm moving to do what I want to do, like, this is so great, and, like, then I just started bartending instead. So
yeah, well, it can be hard, you know. Was it one of those things where you read the screenplays?
I did that too. That was great. I finally got to the point, like, once we got into the season where, like, submissions were happening, I became a reader, and so I would read screenplays, I would approve them and move them to the next round, or I would say this isn't good, but it wasn't all in my hands by any means.
Sure.
I was just one of the readers. So someone had the power or whatever to also read the script and turn it around, like turn my vote around by being like, no, that guy clearly didn't know what he was talking about. This is a good script. Someone else now needs to read it.
Sure.
But if someone else were to read it and say, yeah, no, this isn't good, then, you know, then it doesn't move on. So I feel like I did learn a good amount just from being able to read scripts all the time. But I was also pretty lazy and didn't do all of the reading that I signed on to do. And I think, you know, now I would do that, but then I was more concerned with, like, I had just moved back to Austin. I was of drinking age. Like, it was a party, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where my interests were, I suppose, and I'm like, oh, I'll get around to reading that, and then I never would, so they would have to, like, you know, give the script to somebody else, and I was also, like, I was no longer going into the office, and was just, like, kind of already, like, tainted by the, like, experience, because I wanted it to be something that it wasn't, so...
Interesting. Have you ever gone to another festival or theater somewhere and done a different internship?
No.
Interesting.
Not at that level. But, you know, I will say the greatest takeaway from doing that apprenticeship was that I got a producer's badge to Austin Film Festival the following festival. And so I got to sit on so many panels and watch so many movies. And that was now, and looking back on it, I'm like, I know I'm to blame for where things went wrong, but I'm very thankful that I was able to go to all those panels and watch all those movies, because it was just kind of one of those reminders that, yeah, this is absolutely where I want to be and what I want to be doing, and it was a really cool experience.
I feel like... You're talking about a lot of stuff that happened, like, you know, right after college, and it's like, you know, you gotta forgive yourself for that kind of stuff. I mean, there's so much growing to be done, and sometimes it's like, well, and I mean that in a, like, if you had gone to LA, you would have been too green.
Absolutely.
If you had gone to LA, you would, and nothing had ripped you up yet, then, you know, you would be hurt. And by the first person that told you, listen, kid, you're like every other, you know, whatever bullshit they'll say to you when you walk into auditions,
yeah.
that now you'll just go, okay,
cool,
and
man.
Move on to the next
yeah.
one.
Which is why I'm so thankful now that I'm going, like, after, like, I don't know, growing up. Because I
yeah,
feel like
you've got a lot of experience now,
and I think now I'm more realistic about what I'm walking into.
Mm-hmm.
Because at 18, sure, I'd been told all the time, like, you're gonna get told no a lot, but in the back of my head, I'm like, but I'm not, you know. It's like, so yeah, I know looking back that had I gone at 18, or even had I gone at 22, I'm thankful that I came to Austin and grew the fuck up. And I'm well aware that there is so much more growth to be had, but now I know I'm at the best place that I have been, so I'm thankful for that.
So at what point when you move to Austin after you do the screenwriting apprenticeship, at what point did you start performing or even writing? Or are you writing the
right
whole time?
Right away. The first time I did stand-up was when I was here when I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been writing since I was 16. But I only did it once, right? At Cold Town. And I, you know, you're doing 4 minutes of 4 years of your best writing, you know? So
right.
It's like, so, and it's my first time, and it was like, now I go to open mics, no one's ever there, but this open mic was packed. And for me, like a 20-year-old, a nervous 20-year-old, I did very well. And now, years later, and hearing so many other people's stories, that happens a lot. The first time, it goes really, really well, and you're like, oh, hell yeah, I'm a stand-up comedian, I'm gonna do this forever. And then it never goes that well ever again.
That's
so
true.
It started going pretty poorly for me. When I first moved back here during the apprenticeship, I was trying to do stand-up all the time, like it almost every night of the week, but I was also getting very, very drunk. And I was also, like, had just gone through a breakup and was, like, in this, like, battle with myself of, like, I'm lying because I didn't graduate, and, like, I'm not really doing anything, and I expect so much of myself. And so I was just in a personal space that wasn't the best, and that kind of came out on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not doing well doing stand-up, and I'm doing it almost every night, trying and, like, wondering, like, why are people cringing? Like,
drunkenly yelling at them about your disappointment in life.
Yeah,
and
yeah, essentially.
You're like, why are you laughing?
Right. I was like, it is funny because I'm doing it at a stand-up comedy open mic. Duh. This is a joke.
I'm telling you this real thing.
Yeah.
At a comedy place, so you should laugh at it.
Yeah, but it was so real and drunkenly delivered, probably, that it was more like, I remember looking at my brother once, and he just had that face. I was like, ugh, like, we gotta do something else, John. So then I started bartending, and that kind of prevented me from being able to go to open mics,
because
I'd go to work at like 5,
yep.
you know, and then work till 3 a.m. So then
and bartender hours are stand-up comedian hours.
Yeah, exactly. So then I started taking sketch at New Movement, and then I found out that I don't get to perform my sketch. You know, you have to cast somebody. And I was like, well, I did this because I was like, I wanted to write, but then I wanted to perform what I wrote. So then I started doing improv, and then that just kind of became, like, my performance outlet, and I, like, still have a love for stand-up, and we'll still do it, like, in the, like, boy band show that we had, like, once a month. I would do, like, a little stand-up portion, and then do an interview. but that was it, like, once a month doing stand-up, and I love it every time, but, like, now I'm, like, I know that, like, my love is in acting and, like, I love stand-up, but, like, I don't love it enough to, like, want to kill myself every night at an open mic.
Yeah.
Like, every night of the week, and I don't know, maybe when I go to L.A., though, I might do stand-up on a more regular basis just because it's free.
Yeah.
You know? I mean...
I don't know, I've always seen stand-up and acting as somehow antithetical. Like, stand-up is you telling your own stories and presenting your own perspective, whereas acting is immersing yourself in another person's perspective. And so I've always wondered how those things translate. Like, I understand sitcom actors. Like, you know, Everybody Loves Raymond. That makes sense.
Yeah.
He did his stand-up. His stand-up was about a family. And then he does a show about a family.
Right,
even
right.
now when he's in other movies, I think he's done other work in acting. Because he's not playing Raymond in all these other movies and television shows that he's been in, right? So it's like... It's a different kind of vibe, I feel like. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think what draws me to stand-up is because of that fact, is that I want so badly or need so badly to tell my truth in my own personal story.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in acting, I can't necessarily do that. But in acting, I can take my experiences and put them into whatever the script, you know, may provide. And then in that way, you know, I'm still telling a story, and also, but that's also what I love about acting so much, is that, like, for a moment I get to escape or, like, not be, like, my truth, you know, I get to take that, but put it into somebody else and, like, and exist in that world for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And that both I find, enjoyment in, but maybe it's like I need both. So it's like I need the escape through acting, but I also, there's the part of me that pulls, that's like I need to be heard from my own story, and not, like, you know, some guy's biopic that I'm acting in or something.
Yeah, you mentioned putting your own experiences into the roles that you're doing. Is there a excuse me, is there like a school of acting thought that you most align yourself with?
Well, I've been taking a Meisner technique class for over a year now, and it's been the most, like, helpful training tool that I've used as an actor, like, in the past, you know, I guess, like, maybe 16, 17 years that I've been involved in theater. And but Meisner is actually not to pull from personal experience. It's more of like teaching yourself to live truthfully under these imaginary circumstances. So to be able to put yourself in those shoes so that you're not, like, hurting yourself by, like, drawing from true experience. But I still do it because it's like that's where I know it. So it's like, maybe it's like a combo of, like Method and Meisner, but I enjoy Meisner technique a lot, but I have to pull from my own experiences so that I can really feel like, I can relate, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Meisner really closely aligns with sort of an improv kind of vibe, where it's like just live in the space that you're in for the moment.
Yeah.
Be whoever that character is.
Absolutely.
Sort of improv without the comedy element, where you're making choices that are funny.
Yes.
Instead, you're just like,
that's exactly what it is.
What's happened to me right now? This is how I should logically react.
And so I'm gonna live in that truth and, like, And I think just like, I thought, like, you know, kind of what I said earlier, like, at 18, I thought, oh, yeah, I'm a great actor. I'm really good. But just in this past year, like, putting so much work into actual training, I've experienced more growth than I would have ever expected, like, in both my acting class and both in just performing improv and sketch on a regular basis. So... Yeah, there really is a huge benefit in actual training and practice and performance, as opposed to being an 18-year-old with a an ego that is like, you know, with nothing to back it up.
So then I've heard a lot from stand-ups, certainly in this town and certainly in LA as well, about how they think it's silly to take a class. A lot of them, mm-hmm. you know, think mm-hmm. it's silly to take improv and sketch, which has its own, you know, sort of nerdy elements to it. But yeah. as far as taking an acting class for you, you felt like that it was very, so super helpful to you?
It's been the best part of my, it's been helpful as, like, to be a better human being. Like, uh-huh. because it's all about reading behavior. And it's all about existing in that moment. And I think there were a lot of times, like, you know, a year or two ago where I had a lot of trouble in doing that. Or where I wasn't good at reading people's behavior. Or just existing in that moment. I'm like a million miles in the future or something. Or like just bad at connecting. And this class, this acting class specifically, has been so helpful. And like, and teaching me. And I understand that too. Like, oh, well, if you got it, you got it. But it's like, it's a craft. Like, you gotta...
Yeah, absolutely,
you
it's a craft.
You keep working to get better. And I can't speak on a stand-up class. I don't know if that's actually beneficial. Maybe a stand-up class is going to open mics every night. But, I mean, I watch people who've been doing open mics every night for 3 years, and I'm like, how has there not been any growth for you?
Yeah, like, I think you have to be open in your mind to, like, accept the change. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that even about the, like, the point in your life, like, when you went to college and you were like, this is not the right path for me. It's like, but it could have been. And I guess it kind of was. Yeah. So it's interesting how we kind of self-sabotage ourselves. And, like, so any of those people who are saying, oh, I don't want to take a class. It's like, you know that classes are just people trying to get better at whatever it is.
That's all it is.
Like, if you're a stand-up, you don't even have to take a stand-up class. You take something adjacent, storytelling, like, you know, heck, even the Meisner class are probably helpful.
Yeah, for sure. And I had someone come to a show from my acting class on Thursday, and they had commented on the fact they were like, you've gotten so much more comfortable and confident as a performer. And I was like, I really think it's because of this acting class. It's like, because I'm doing it every single week, and it's like, it's teaching me, like, how to exist in that moment. And so you can translate that into stand-up. It's like, yes, you're going to be nervous, accept that, but just be present and be yourself and, like, tell your truth, and, you know, hopefully it all goes well, but, like, really make that connection with, you know, the people that are in that room and in that moment with you, and react off of their reaction. Going to class, like, I'm all for it, but it is also expensive, and I probably won't be able to afford it in LA.
I was going to ask, do you think you'll take classes in LA? It'll take a second for you to get settled, you know, once you do.
If I can find work that allows me to pay rent and also pay a tuition of a class, then, yeah, I would like to get trained at an improv school that I'll probably, you know, go see shows at every theater and try and decide what fits my vibe.
But even other acting
as well.
School, like, so you've taken Meisner, but maybe, you know, maybe there's another school of thought there. You could take a different thing, or even find a different Meisner teacher. Like,
and
I bet you
too.
Your current teacher knows somebody that could connect you. And
she used to be
that could be interesting. To, if nothing else, taking classes, in my mind, is a great way to make new friends.
Yes, absolutely.
Like,
all
you just
my
get to
friends
find people
for a long time. It's like my friends are my brother's friends because he already lived here. But then it's like in this past year, my closest friends are in my acting class or in my improv troupe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's because we took classes together. And that's just, as an adult, it's you're not in school class together, but like these other classes kind of offer like the opportunity to create those friendships. And they don't happen right away. You know, that first month in my acting class or 2 months, I was scared and I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever going to, like, be friends with any of these people. Then a year goes by, and you're like, oh, we've spent, you know, every Monday night or every Tuesday night together for the past year. So, like, yeah, some of y'all are going to become close friends. And we're also, like, essentially just staring into each other's souls and ripping each other apart. But it's a safe space, so... so, yeah, you get to know someone pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that as an adult, most of the people that are your friends are your work friends.
Right.
They're, like, people that you do work with, and if your career is acting, then those are the people that you're just going to hang out with because that's who you're around.
Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine that your circle gets wider if you have a steady job in acting. Like, I'm sure people on television shows... they're not just friends with the other actors. They're, like, also friends with the grip and the sound guy. You know,
uh-huh,
it's like,
'cause uh-huh.
these are the people you're with all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I always think it's hard to make friends, number one.
It is.
And so, like, whenever you can put yourself in a position of, like, both doing the thing that you, like, love to do. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I do this podcast so I can, like, have social time with people.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's like... it's like, otherwise, I would be a shut-in, which I already, I am, I'm a shut-in. But it's like, that way it's like, hey, let's have a conversation for an hour, and then,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to put it up on the internet, but.
But, you know, it's fine. And I was doing, in our monthly show, I would do like a 5 to 10 minute interview. And just in that moment, like, I'd probably interview like 10 people, you know, and I, at the end of that, I feel like every single one of those people has become a better friend of mine.
Yeah.
Because we spent that moment in time together, like, just getting, like, having an actual conversation as opposed to,
yeah.
Oh, hey, it's good to see you again. You got a show you're on? Okay, cool, cool, cool. See ya. Or good show, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so this, like, allows for a like, human connection that I'm all about.
I think that will be helpful in the acting career as it moves forward.
Yeah.
What are your like plans as soon as you get there? As a sort of wrap up for our chat, like what do you think when you first get there? What's your like? I want to make sure I do this, this, and this, or I want to learn, or I want to see. Is there anything?
That's funny. My plan is to take a minute to get there, like a week, 2 weeks. I don't know. Like I'm gonna take the road. And, like, see things that I've never
cool
seen.
Oh, cool, road tripping.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
But try to not run out of money, you know?
Sure.
Like, if I'm like, okay, John, like, maybe you didn't need to go to White Sands, New Mexico. Like, it's to, you like, let's get to L.A. So say, you know, L.A., a job, like, a job first and foremost. Like, if it's at a smoothie bar for the time being, fine. But I would like to find something in my field.
Sure.
The only thing that I'm like, I really want to see that go to shows, like comedy shows, but also I really want to go to the Griffith Observatory.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know why. Well, I mean, probably because of Rebel Without a Cause and La La Land, but like, I'm like, that's a place I want to go. I want to sit there and be like, I'm here. All right, now let's just day by day. I don't know, let everything just kind of unfold as it does, and, you know, I am aware that there will be some moments that are tough, or, like, unprepared for them, hopefully, but I'm also very excited and think that there will be a lot of growth, and, there's just, like, if I don't do it, I'm going to just keep being like, oh, I should have gone. Or, like, why am I not? And, like, for 10 years now, I've been wanting to live there. So I'm just going to go do it. Maybe it's 3 months. Maybe it's 30 years. I don't know. But...
wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Go for 30 years. Shoot for it.
Why not? Yeah.
Why not? I mean, let something take you away. You know what I mean? Like, right now, it's this dream that's taking you away. But if you're going to leave, you know, let it be that television show in Atlanta that they, you know, they're like, we need you. Or let it be, you know, there's a movie in Toronto. You get, you know, sure, why not? You can go check out the rest of the world. New York City needs you to be in this thing or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, sure, you can travel for that, but all under the auspice of working hard, trying to make this happen. I think it's hard. I definitely think it's hard, and I feel like it's definitely one of those things where it's like, you know, it doesn't work out for everybody, but mm-hmm. I really just feel like the people that I see that do well are just the people that never give up.
And that's what I've never wanted anything else.
Yeah.
And I don't ever intend to give up. And I think what I had to do, or like as I've gotten older, I've made the realistic outcome is that maybe I'm just gonna get work. If I can just get work consistently, I'm fine with that. Like if I'm on set, if I'm acting, if I'm like doing things, I'm gonna be happy. Maybe it turns out I'm only in shit movies, and well, that's unfortunate. Like I didn't like turn into like the next like, you know, big thing. And at 18, that's what I would have wanted, you know. And now I think I'm okay with just like, if I'm doing it, I did it, I guess, you know.
One of my friends in LA recently told me that the like biggest life lesson that they had was just to say yes to everything, even if it seemed like it was like, even if you felt like, oh, this is above me or this is below me, just do it. So you're the guy in the coffee shop in the movie handing the coffee to the guy. So you're the one, you're the valet. So you're the guy who gets shot first in the Die Hard 12.
Right, right.
Like, it doesn't matter, like, because you're gonna be, and I always say this too whenever I'm talking to, whenever I'm talking to students.
Yeah.
Is like, you've got to just be a person that people want to be with.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a person that people want to be around. Like, half of an audition is you fit the thing that we had in our mind for this character. The other half is, hey, you seem like the kind of person who I'd like to spend time with.
Yeah.
Because you're going to spend, you know, 6 months to a year with people.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you do that, then, you know, and you're a dick or something, like, nobody wants to hang out with that guy, right?
Nope.
Plus, if you're Joe Schmo, the cab driver, and everybody has a fun time hanging out with you on set, they'll be like, get that guy back here.
Yeah.
Hey, we need a guy that could do this. Let's get him to do, because it's like, it's two small roles, and then you're, like, working with the same people because they're your friends and stuff like that. It's like anything.
Yeah.
You know, and I just feel like a lot of times people walk in, like you're saying about 18-year-old you would be expecting to be famous straight out.
Right,
they're like,
right.
Where's my friends? How can I be Phoebe right away?
Yeah.
Like, okay, relax. You know, how are you going to do this? Work hard and then maybe it'll all work out.
Yeah.
You just have to say yes to whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, I see famous people in commercials.
Right.
Like,
so
they
said, like,
yes.
Really, and but then when I see it, I'm like, so how much money did you need? Or like, or maybe that's not even what it is.
No, I usually think, why are you taking roles away from people that I know that need it?
Yeah.
That's always what I think. But, you know, sometimes the marketing people want to push, so they pull somebody famous.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes they're all like, hey, we need a strong guy to be in charge of farmers. J.K. Simmons, would you like to do it?
Yeah.
I know you're literally in so many movies and, like, very much too famous to do this, but hey, could you do this?
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's something funny about that. I mean, hell, even the Can You Hear Me Now guy's got a, like, new career path.
Yeah.
Working for, and the fact that he did that, people will think it's funny. And that it's interesting. And he'll probably get other stuff. He'll get movies and other roles. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he was guesting on Big Bang Theory and I just missed it. You know?
Right.
Just
that's
like,
totally fair.
He's just around doing stuff. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just think it's, you never know. You just don't know what little thing is going to get you in the right room for the right thing.
Yeah.
So if you say no to, like, you know, barista number 3... in this weird indie film, who knows? I mean,
because it's like, well, I have to say no to that because it's not going to look good on, like, my overall, like, big picture resume, because, like, what if I take this and I missed that opportunity? But, like, maybe that opportunity only exists by saying yes to this thing.
Yeah. Plus, there's so much, like, there's so many years.
That's the thing, too, that I feel like I've learned here. Like, the fact I'm glad I came to Austin and that, like, stand-up went really fucking poorly off the at the top, you know? And I, because that's just was, like, maybe, like, as a whole, I'm like, you know what? It took me a couple years to, like, get, like, everything in motion here, you know?
Yeah.
So I have to, like, realize, like, that's also what's going to happen when I go to L.A. It's not like I'm going to move out there, I'm going to do a stand-up set, and I'm going to start headlining, you know?
Yeah.
That's not, it's going to take a couple years for me to, like, find a network of people and to, like, feel comfortable. And now I'm prepared to do that, hopefully at, like, a level that I wouldn't have been 2 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm really excited for your adventure. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah.
In a couple of years, after you've done some stuff, like, and had some adventures, I'd love to, you know, have you back on and just talk about what the new thing is. I mean, I've said this 1,000 times, but, audience, if you made it all the way to this point in the episode, you love me, so it's okay that I'm repeating myself, but I always want to do, I do this podcast so that people who are interested in this career know the different parts of it, the different levels.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you're just starting out, sometimes you're just moving to LA. I've talked to people that were like in LA for 40 years. I've talked to people that have been teaching improv for 40 years. Like, it's just a, everyone can pick a different thing, and who knows? And it changes. I mean, who knows? You could do a bunch of movies and be like, I want to be a director instead.
I would love that.
Or, you know, or like you start, you go to some acting class and you end up apprenticing with that person, and then you're the guru to all the actors. Like, you're coaching actors and making them better, you know, all that stuff. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows what's but it's all possible, and that's what the best part is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you for sitting down with me.
Thanks for having me.
You're
I'm
really
glad
sweet.
This happened.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Well, good night.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.